You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Tuesday, August 17th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined by two distinguished journalists here today in our virtual studio. Really pleased to welcome back Howard Weiss-Tisman, who covers Southern Vermont for Vermont Public Radio, and Darren Marcy, the editor of the Manchester Journal. Gentlemen, good to have you back again. It's been too long.
Good to be back.
Anyway, of course, a lot continuing to go on. And Howard, let me start with you, if I may. The governor just finished his weekly press briefing a little while ago before we were coming on the air here. And I just wondered, since topic A is once again COVID and now the Delta variant and the impact that's having on plans to reopen schools and businesses, and are we going to see a return to wearing masks again? Was there anything that was said at the governor's press briefing this morning that we should know about?
Yeah, well, it was, as you said, more of the same. I was kind of struck by the tone the administration seems to be taking as far as walking a line between continuing to give us good news about Vermont, about the number of Vermonters who are vaccinated, about our low hospitalization rates, but at the same time, Dr. Levine and the rest of the administration warning us that the Delta variant is showing up. The numbers are going up a little bit in Vermont. So they're kind of, you know, they're kind of walking two lines at the same time, saying that Vermont is in good shape. It's certainly in better shape than a lot of other parts of the country. But at the same time, the Delta variant is here. One of the big takeaways I got from today's press conference, Mike Pichek, who gives the daily overall reports, he said he expects the Delta numbers to plateau here and in New England pretty shortly. The numbers are still going up. We're seeing more cases now than we have in many months. Hospitalizations are still low, but they're rising. And Pichek said he expects that to plateau shortly, in a couple of weeks or a month or so.
Another thing that certainly seems to have plateaued is the vaccination rate. It's kind of inching up slowly, continuing to inch up slowly, but we seem to be stuck around that 84 or 85% mark for folks who have had at least one shot. And I think it's also in the high 70s for people who have had both shots. And of course, that's going to become a bit of an issue, I guess, very shortly. When schools reopen, I believe the latest guidance from the Agency of Education is calling for schools to start off the school year for 10 days with mandatory mask wearing for students and staff and faculty to give them a chance to make sure they've reached an 80% vaccination rate or until they do. Certainly, I imagine that a lot of educators 2 months or so ago were thinking, we've turned the corner on this one and we don't have to worry about that anymore, or right. Won't have to worry about it like we did.
Yeah, that was a big topic today. And again, there's the administration tried to clarify things because there seems to be some confusion about that, because they did put out that once schools are at 80%, they are not going to have to wear masks. And so there's been a little confusion. The governor, in his opening remarks, made it clear that they want schools to start with masks. Now, it's interesting that we're not under a state of emergency, so the state can't mandate that. What they're doing is they're strongly suggesting it. There's still some questions about remote learning. It seems that the state is not going to offer that same level of remote learning that they did last year, which I think is going to figure into a lot of decision-making that parents are making when the remote learning was a viable option. It was a lot easier to keep your kids at home. Of course, anyone's allowed to homeschool, so people can choose to homeschool, but that level of support is not going to be there. There are no distancing requirements right now, so the kids are going to have to be masked, but they're going to be close together. And one other point to remember in that, while the state is saying that once schools are at 80%, they won't have to mask. Of course, any elementary school is not going to get there because kids under 12 can't be vaccinated. So I think there's a lot of questions. As you said, I think teachers, administrators were looking forward to some sense of normalcy. It's not going to be normal starting the school year, that's for sure.
I think that's a really important point. The schools thought, you know, heading into the summer and through the summer, they thought things were going to be back to normal, and they're not. I'm focused here on the North Shire in the BRSU, the Bennington Rutland Supervisory Union. They put out some guidance not that long ago that's, as far as I know, it's mostly out of date now. Some of it is. We've got a story coming out this week that's going to be wrapping this stuff up and updating it with the most recent numbers. But Arlington is putting out their information. A lot of people are still waiting to see. They're waiting to see what the state recommends. And as Howard was saying, there's not really a mandate option, but they're certainly strongly recommending. And heading back into the school year, they're going to be wearing masks. But there's, you know, the questions about the distancing and some of the changes that schools made last year with outdoor classrooms and things like that. I think most schools did away with those plans heading back in, and they might be reconsidering some of that now with the Delta in the state. One thing that Howard had brought up that I think was really important, the surge that we're seeing, we're certainly lucky here in Vermont because of that 85% vaccination rate. Down south in some of those states that have 40 and 50% vaccination rates, they've got a real problem on their hands. And Vermont's in a really good situation right now. That's, I think, how we could be talking about potentially hitting a peak as soon as we are. There are some places that are really just ramping up, and the virus is going to be a story for a while. So we're lucky right here.
Yeah, and the one thing about schools is without that state mandate, it's really up to each district to kind of make up their own rules, which is kind of adding to the confusion right now, is that school boards have to decide from district to district how they're going to handle things. So
I've often thought it would have been a lot easier for everybody if they had one uniform standard across the entire state. I mean, I've often been puzzled, certainly was last year when they kind of lifted it up to a lot of the individual school districts or supervisory unions to make their own decisions about that. But it sure would have seemed like it would have been easier to have one uniform standard across the board.
Yeah. And just one more quick COVID thing. Talking locally tonight, the Brattleboro Select Board will be considering bringing back their masking mandate. They, early in the pandemic, they required it. All stores, town offices, et cetera, had to have it. They took it off earlier in the summer, and they're going to talk about that tonight, about possibly reinstituting the mask mandate in Brattleboro.
Mm. I'm kind of interested that hasn't come up more in recent weeks. A lot of organizations have, especially hospitals and places like that, have brought back mandates, and I'm surprised there hasn't been more towns or other organizations that haven't brought up the topic at least. I think people just – When they dropped the mandates back in the spring, or exactly when it was, but I think people were so relieved to not have to wear masks, be forced to wear masks all the time. It's hard to go back again. So hopefully we can avoid it.
Yeah. We'll have to see how that is going forward. It will be interesting to see if this latest uptick or spike or whatever the right term is behaves as Mike Pichak is hoping. Since we do also have fall foliage season right around the corner, which is a super important time of year for many businesses, particularly those in the very hard-hit hospitality industry. I'm sure they were all hoping for a strong foliage season, kind of built in part around the reputation Vermont, I think, has acquired as being a safe state to come to and travel to. And I think we've sort of gained a lot of good notoriety out of this whole experience, that there's some silver lining to be grappled for in this. But in addition to school impact, there's also the business impact as well. And if those restaurants and other gift shops can't find the staff to be open or are going to be having to enforce mask mandates again, that's going to put a damper on things, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of lodging establishments and restaurants in the Manchester area alone that are watching this Delta variant very closely and wondering what it's going to do to them. There's not a restaurant anywhere that I've heard of that hasn't had some sort of an impact. Some are limiting seating because they don't have the staff to handle it. Other places are closing, you know, operating 4 days a week or something like that. It's tough out there. And in the lodging establishments, they can't find housekeeping in various positions that they need to fill. It's rough everywhere. The seasonal laborers apparently are not to be found as well. It's hard.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating. You can just, you know, sense the constraint that all of this is putting on the economy. I'm sure everybody would welcome as much business as possible. It must be so hard. Can you imagine for a motel owner or a restaurant owner to have to shut down or not bring in those dollars because they can't staff it? It really must be holding. I haven't heard an economic analysis of, you know, they must be able to measure what's that doing to the economy. It must be constricting growth a little bit by restaurant only open 4 days a week. It's just less money flowing through the economy.
So I think it's on September 4th when the federal $300 unemployment bonuses or additional payments to folks who had to leave work is going to be removed and no longer happening. I mean, a lot of people have said, well, the reason, you know, you're having trouble finding workers is that they can make more money being at home and collecting that $300 benefit plus other unemployment insurance and going back to work. Have you got any sense from talking to business owners in your respective areas as to whether or not they're anticipating that the workforce shortage is going to ease after we get to September, or not going to have an effect?
I think, at least in the North Shire, there's really more of a concern with the housing issues that this has brought. All of our housing got bought up by folks that were fleeing dangerous places, you know, from the city. And a lot of rental stock is now single family residences or, you know, second homes for folks from the city. And there's just not rentals. So the folks that they are counting on to wait tables and change beds have no place to live. And a lot of them have moved on to other places. That I've understood that to be one of the biggest impediments right now, as well as childcare issues. So.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Darren, because Howard last week put together a really interesting piece on housing shortages, focusing on the ski towns over in Windham County, Dover and Wilmington. And Howard, I guess I'd like to invite you to walk us through that story. What did you learn when you were researching that story?
Right. Well, really what struck me about that story, and Darren kind of alluded to it, is that in these ski towns, there's kind of two things going on. People who are building expensive houses, they can't build them quick enough. You know, I spoke to one guy, he's 2 years out. You know, he's usually booking for next year. If you want a house next year, sure, he'll fit it in. This guy is 2 years out at this point. So if you want, you know, a $400,000 log cabin, no problem. But if you're a working family, a teacher, a service worker, the affordable housing is just not there. So it's really interesting that there are these two issues going on at the same time where there's a housing boom and a property boom, but just nothing and less affordable stuff. You know, one thing that's important to point out, both with housing and with workforce, is that it was tight before COVID. You know, this is not new in Vermont. We've been talking about workforce shortages for years. We've been talking about housing shortages for years. And it just kind of tightened the screws on everything. The workforce shortage, as far as the unemployment insurance ending, my colleague at VPR, Pete Hirschfeld, did a story on this a week ago or so. And it's not quite as crystal clear as that. A lot of it goes back to our demographics. And the number of people in Vermont's workforce is going down because we're just getting older and we're not having babies and young folks are not moving here. So every month, every year, more people leave the workforce and there's just no one on the other end of the pipeline to do it. So I think that's it as much as anything. Like Darren said, I don't think come September when the unemployment runs out, there's going to be a big rush for people to fill jobs. At all. It'll be really interesting to see the ski industry, how the foreign workers come in with COVID too, and how that impacts them coming up. So these are deeply entrenched issues that it's going to take a very long time. It's easy to be anxious about it because there's no easy fixes about it for sure.
And Darren, I didn't think I cut you off there a little bit when you were starting to talk about the situation over here on this side of the mountain in Manchester. But it sure sounds from everyone I've been talking to over here that, boy, its inventory is just about as tight as they've seen it.
Yeah, it really is. There's just not a lot out there. And as Howard mentioned, it's the lower, the more affordable housing that's really struggling. You can find a high-end home if that's what you're looking for. But finding that $200,000 house if you're looking to buy, or an affordable rental, that's really where the problems are. I've got people telling me they're driving from Glens Falls and things like that to work in Manchester because they can't find anything within 30 minutes or so of this town to live in. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think we're 10 years behind on where we should be as far as producing new houses, but they're not building the low end houses because the profit's not there. They're making money on those $500,000 homes. They don't make a lot of money when you build a $150,000-$200,000 house. So that's part of it as well. We've got a story coming out soon, if it's not already online. Some new numbers have come in related to the census, and it shows the boom that this state has experienced, particularly in the ski towns and things. Some big triple digit increases in populations and things in places. It's crazy the number of folks who moved in. It'd be interesting to see how many of them stay. Are they here permanently? Or are they already looking for a place where they came from to move back now? So it'll be interesting. Right. Maybe there might be a lot of houses for sale soon. Who knows?
All right. And that data, too, tells a tale of kind of two Vermonts where the ski towns, Ludlow, Stowe, Wilmington, Dover, saw an increase in the census. And then towns like Springfield, Newport,
right.
Rockingham saw a real serious dip. So low-income folks are fleeing, and people who have means are coming. It's not Vermont. That's our country kind of in a nutshell, too. You know, the gap between the rich and the poor, there's hardly any middle class. Our Senator Sanders has been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah, it is interesting how these numbers are shaking out. And just to drill down a level here, it was interesting when I was reading the story, I saw it in the Bennington Banner this morning, Darren, about the census that your colleague Tiffany Tan wrote. And it was interesting how a lot of the towns in the South Shire, like Poundle and Bennington, saw decreases in population, but up in the North Shire, Dorset, Sunderland, Arlington, were up by over 100 people in each town. Kind of interesting as to why that's going on.
Yeah, and I don't have the exact answer, but I think Howard just nailed it. It's the haves and the have-nots. You know, it costs more money to live in Dorset than it does in Pownall. So, the folks that can afford to move to pick up and buy a new place or whatever are, you know, they're more mobile because they have the income to be able to do that. When you're working a service industry job, you can't always just drop what you're doing and move someplace else because it's convenient. So, it's going to be interesting how this all shakes out in the long run. We know what the impacts are right now, but how that's going to affect everybody down the road will be the real question.
Is the cavalry coming over the hill in the form of the ARPA money? I mean, a certain chunk of that was supposed to go to building new affordable or workforce housing. Is that going to be enough to kind of stabilize things?
From everything that I've heard, and I haven't followed this as closely as I should have, but everything that I've heard about this, most of that's a year or 2 years out. I mean, they're going to be looking to rehab some dilapidated homes and things like that, that would be a little bit quicker. But as far as building anything new, you know, it's certainly not going to help this winter. And it seems like a lot of the ARPA money is from the town managers and folks I've been talking to and the board members. They're looking at doing projects that they've had, you know, in the works for a while, and affordable housing isn't always on that list. I mean, I'm hearing about sewer systems and water systems and things like that versus affordable housing. But, you know, there's some of that talk in every community because they all realize that if they don't have a place for people to live, they're not going to attract any new residents. So
let's move on from that for at least a moment here, Darren, because I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the latest turn of events in the West Pawlet shooting range story with Daniel Banyai, who you and the Journal have done a terrific job following the story, and I was very pleased to hear on the This American Life podcast about Daniel Banyai that your paper got a little pat in the back for its coverage, along with VPR and VT Digger. So I guess bring us up to speed here. What's the latest word then out of Slate Ridge and Mr. Banyai?
Well, the wheels of justice turn slow, as the neighbors over there really know. Last night I went to a tax hearing. Three residents are challenging their tax assessments, and it's to the point where they're actually holding hearings to be able to present evidence. And Mr. Banyai was one of the three, and it was the circus you can imagine it would be. He showed up, and the first thing he did was refuse to put a mask on, which was an issue. He has a medical exemption, and then he spent most of the meeting calling everybody names. They're all corrupt and everything in Pawlet, and he had some personal issues with several people, and he got in the face of a couple of people. He and select board member and neighbor Rich Hewlett went nose to nose on the sidewalk outside, forced the constable to step in and calm things down. It was the usual Daniel Banyai type of a situation, you know, that's things aren't calm when he's around. And I don't know that he got what he wanted because, they're asking him to present information and details about why his taxes are too high. And all he wanted to do was argue about how the mail is sent to him. It just, you know, there's just not a lot of lot of conversation always with this. Overall, the wheels are turning. He's challenged the decision by the environmental court that he owes, I can't remember the exact number now, is it $36,000? A bunch of money in fines and things and various fines assessed for not being in compliance with the zoning permits. He's challenged that as well as the fact that he's supposed to destroy all of the improvements he's made to his property, which he claims is $1.6 million. And several times he's made that claim. A lot of people doubt that number, and he's shown nothing to prove that that's accurate. But they're saying that he's supposed to destroy all of that because it's not permitted, and the environmental court agreed. He's challenged that to the Supreme Court, and the absolute most latest, just a little piece of this, is his attorney has recently filed for an extension. I think she now has another month or so to file their answer to the town of Pawlet's request on this. Eventually it's going to go to the Supreme Court, likely, if he continues his opposition to the decision, and we'll go from there. It's anybody's guess as to whether he has a case or not, but he does have an attorney advocating for him, which is different. A lot of times he serves as his own attorney and doesn't always do so well in the eyes of the courts. So we'll see what happens.
Now, is it still being used as a shooting range? I mean, I guess there was some question as to whether or not, and I think I got this from the podcast that you wrote a story about in last week's journal, about whether or not the range was still being actively used. Do we know what is happening?
He was ordered to cease all activity on the range that involves anybody else. Nothing says he can't go out and shoot on his own land. But he's not supposed to be holding any classes or providing any training or anything like that. And the neighbor said that the noise has gone way down since that decision came out. There is still gunfire. There is still some traffic. but you know, it's pretty secluded. You have to trespass to see what's going on there. And so nobody really knows what's going on. But he's really, a lot of his social media has quieted down. You know, he used to be very open and talking about what he was doing on his Facebook page, which he claims was taken down by the government Facebook because they're anti-Second Amendment. There's more to that story that should come out soon. But he doesn't do that anymore. The most he's claimed these days on his Twitter account is that he's building a fourth range, which is supposed to be a long distance range. He's claiming it's 1400 yards. I don't know. He's got 30 acres over there. So it's, anything's possible, but he's, you know, who knows what's going on with the lack of Act 250 with all of this land clearing and wetlands impacts and things. If that's what's going on, the folks who have seen it claim that there is. One of the things that came out last night with this tax situation is they appointed three members as a committee to go inspect the land to see if his claims are accurate or not. Whether or not he actually allows that inspection is a whole other matter. He's claiming that anytime, any place, anybody's welcome to come and take a look. But in the past, anytime that's happened, there's been reasons that have cropped up that suddenly the visit cannot happen. And so we'll see. That's scheduled for, if I remember correctly, September 5th or something like that. So, you know, maybe we'll have some eyes on the property soon or maybe not.
A long running and tangled saga for sure.
Yeah.
In the few minutes we have left, Howard, I just want to go back to you real quick, just to touch again on some of the census data that we mentioned there a moment ago in connection with housing and labor. It struck me that there are two counties that lost significant numbers of population in Vermont. One of them was Rutland County, and the other one was Windham, which surprised me. Down nearly 7% in population. And, of course, that becomes kind of significant because that impacts political reapportionment, which is going to be one of the projects the legislature will be taking up, I guess, fairly soon. And I suppose we'll have in place by, the beginning of next year, I guess would be the idea. Is there any concern that Windham County might, like, either lose a seat, either in the Senate or the House? Or have you been hearing anything from your sources on that?
I have not heard too much about that. We have the, you know, of course, the speaker lives down here. We got some pretty active members, so I haven't heard that much about that. But like I said, I think we have some pretty powerful lawmakers around here, so they'll keep their eyes on things, I'm sure.
Well, political redistricting, of course, is the most supremely political act, I guess, of any. Anything, gerrymandering and all of that, not a nerd of and all of that. It'd just be interesting to see, because Chittenden County, conversely, now is just accelerating even more as being the most populous county in the state by, I guess, you'd say a pretty shocking margin. I'm just looking for the numbers here. Like 160,000 people live in Chittenden County.
And continues to grow, too. That's something.
Yeah. So at some point, that's going to get reflected, I think, in the distribution of Senate seats and House seats and how they would redraw lines up there. I'm not sure if there would be much impact down here as to whether or not we might, you know, get reshuffled somehow. But that'll certainly be interesting to follow. The whole census data thing is really quite interesting, not just on our state and local level, but also nationally. And been a lot of discussion about that over the past week or so since the numbers came out and how that might play out nationally.
I misspoke. I said the House Speaker. I meant the Senate Pro Tem. I wanted to correct that.
And Senator Ballant, yes. All right. Well, I want to thank both of you again very much for making the time for the conversation today. Darren Marcy, editor of the Manchester Journal. Howard Weiss-Tisman, who covers Southern Vermont for Vermont Public Radio. And thanks to all of you as well for being with us. Hope you've enjoyed our discussion and show. And we'll see you again the next time. And meanwhile,
thanks for having us.
Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.